Studying the book of Romans again, and I want to go back and I just can't help myself. I have to go back and rehearse just a little bit to get us back up, put our minds all on the same page. Let me ask a question or two to see if you can help me know where you are. Can a person be saved by law? My first question. Can a person be saved by law? It can be. How? Okay, by keeping it perfectly. And I want to tweak that just a little bit, because technically that's right, or generally that's right. Technically, law cannot save you. And you're going to have friends, Romans and countrymen, lend me your ear here and your mind. Law can't save you. Law can condemn you, but it can't save you. Has there ever been anybody that was saved by law? And before you answer, that's a little bit of a set-up question, because most people would say, yes, Jesus was saved by law, but the answer is no, he was not saved by law. Law just did not condemn him. Do you understand the difference? Jesus Christ saved himself. He lived perfectly. He never sinned. So law didn't even save him. And law can't save you. And I'm saying that, like Paul said to the Galatians, the Christians in Galatia, you who are trying to be justified by law, I want you to listen. And it's really interesting that so many of us keep having this feeling that we want to appeal to law for our salvation. And I want to keep coming back to you every possible way I can think of to convince you that you don't want to stand before God and be judged by law. We're really big on justice, and that's not a bad thing. Okay, laws and governments their job is to administer justice, to administer laws in a just and fair way. And I want to live in a society where there are laws and where those laws are administered in a just way. But when I stand before God, I don't want justice. Not based on me. Law can't save you. It can condemn you. And when Jesus was judged by law, at every point, his life was held up to the standard, the perfect standard of law, and the result was not guilty, not guilty, not guilty, not guilty, not guilty, all the way through. And when it got through, law had not saved him. Law had not condemned him. Does that make sense to you? There's a difference. And we need to hang on to that difference. We need to understand that difference. Can a person be saved by law? No. Can a person be saved under law? I hope so. Don't you? Were there any people that were saved that lived under the law of Moses? This is yes. Yes, there were people. But it wasn't the law that did it. It never has been the law that did it. And when we get this idea that they had the law of Moses and we have another law, that what Christ did is he came and died to redeem us from this law and give us a better law, we better rethink this thing. Galatians 3 is going to say if a law had been given that could give life, verily righteousness would have come by law. That's not law. Does some really good things. And again, I want to say to you, and I keep saying this over and over, law is not the villain here. Law is really not my problem. And he's going to address that specifically. You know what my problem is? Me. I can't keep it. Now, I handed out a little, this little thing right here. And if you have it with you, you're welcome to follow along. If you don't, then that's fine. You don't have to have it. The big part of this little brochure here is a study of law. And I want to go back and make sure that we understand what law is. At least we lay a foundation to understand our relationship to law. Law has a really good purpose. There are some really, really good, absolutely necessary things, things that could not be accomplished without law. And so, don't think I'm saying that if we just got rid of law, we would be well. That's really not true at all. We don't want to live where there's no law. But we want to let law do what law was designed to do and not try to put law in a position to try to accomplish something that God never intended for it to accomplish. Let's talk about the purpose of law. And I've asked Tyrone to read Romans chapter 3, verse 19 and 20. Romans 3, 19 and 20. And if someone reads, if you'll have the microphone so that we can have it on tape for those who listen to the tape. Romans 3, 19 and 20. The purpose, and listen to this with the idea of picking out a purpose for law. Tyrone?
Now we know that whatever the law says, it says to those who are under the law, so that every mouth may be silenced and the whole world held accountable to God. Therefore, no one will be declared righteous in his sight by observing the law. Rather, through the law, we become conscious of sin.
Okay, so if you're to pick a purpose out there that he said law, what was the purpose of law that he gave Romans 3, 19, and 20? Okay, it sets up a standard by which man will be judged. And the result of being judged by law is what? That's right. Every mouth will be stopped. And the King James says, and the whole world become guilty before God. And so it sets a standard of judgment for man to be judged. That's what law does. It does that in our society today. If you go into court and you're accused of violating law, then what is given as evidence that you did it? The law itself, right? The speed limit was 35. That's the law. But you were going 65 in it. And so the law set up a standard for judgment. Thou shalt not kill. Thou shalt not commit adultery. That's the standard. It sets a standard up for judgment. And we talked about in Romans chapter 2 how every person has that law, whether it's under the law of Moses or moral law. If you would, Tyrone, read Romans 5:20.
The law was added so that the trespass might increase. But where sin increased, grace increased all the more.
Okay, so the first part's one of the part I'm looking for now. We'll get to this last part a little bit later, where sin increased, grace increased all the more. That's really good news. But the first part said what? The law was added so that the trespass might increase, or the King James says to make sin abound. You know, if man is left to himself, he's going to come up with this philosophy. I'm okay, you're okay. I'll take the high road, you take the low road, and I'll see you there. But that's not what the Bible teaches. There is a standard, and God gave law to make sin abound. It shows the true character of sin. Because we live in a society that, and it's not just our society, it's every society. Over a period of time, if you give us enough time, we'll make sin disappear. because what you do is okay and what I do is okay, and we'll make up nice little names for things like adultery. We'll give them nice names. We'll start out with things like they're having an affair. That sounds a lot better than adultery, right? And we'll even soften it up more than that, and we'll keep on and keep on until it is not anything bad in it. We're in the process of doing that to homosexuality right now. We're in the process of softening it up and making it more and more palatable until it's not that big a deal. And if you don't think your kids are being taught that, you better think again, because they are. And it's pretty amazing how many young people today that grew up in Christian homes really would think that their parents were being really, really hard and harsh and judgmental by saying that homosexuality is a sin. Because our society, we're in the process of softening this thing up. And that seems to be what society feels its place. So it is to make sin abound. In fact, it tells you how God truly feels about sin. Illustration. First century. City of Jerusalem. Mother has her little boy by the hand, and they're trying to cross Main Street in Jerusalem. And the chariots are going by. I mean, they're just coming by. There's six lanes of chariots going by, okay? Really, really busy. So they're on the curb here waiting. She's holding her little boy's hand. They're waiting until they can get across the street. And all of a sudden, they look down the street, and here comes a mob of people. Big mob. And as that mob of people approaches, and as they pass by, what it turns out to be is a large group of people that have a man in the midst of them, and they're holding on to him, arms and legs, and they're carrying him toward the city gate. And as they pass by, the little boy can hear the man screaming and begging for mercy. And they watch as that crowd of people passes by, and they go on out, and they go out the city gate, and the little boy looks up at his mother, and he says, "Mama, what are they doing with that man? What was going on? Why were they taking him out of the city, and why was he crying?" And she looks at her son, and she says, "Son, you remember that God told us that when you get married, that you stay faithful to your wife?" "Yes, ma'am," because he was taught those things from really early age up. Well, this man didn't. And so he was found guilty of not being faithful to his wife. And they're taking him. You remember that big hole in the ground outside the city with all those rocks piled up there? And I've always told you to stay away from there and to never, never go there and play. "Yes, ma'am." Well, they're taking that man out there, and they're going to throw him down in that hole, and they're going to pick up rocks, and they're going to throw them at him until he's dead. "Why, Mama?" "Because God said that it's that serious. That if a person is not faithful to his wife, if a man's not faithful to his wife, or a woman's not faithful to her husband, then they're to be taken out and killed." Now, project that little boy 10 years later. He's in college now. And here comes this sweet young thing with her skirt up really high and her blouse down really low. And he starts thinking, looks pretty good. To his mind comes a scene. That scene of that mob of people carrying that man outside the city. And the very idea of him being hit with rocks until he's dead. And he brings that to this present situation. He says, "You know what? I don't think it's worth that. This must really, really be serious." Now, the law is a good thing. The law shows the seriousness of sin. It was wrong to kill and to steal and commit adultery and all those things before Mount Sinai. But what Mount Sinai did and what the law of Moses did is it put penalties with them. It took it out of the realm of, well, I don't think that's such a bad deal. I don't think that's so serious. And it put it in God's view. And God said, if this happens, I want you to take this person out and I want you to kill him. And so it put consequences with those sins. And it showed how truly terrible sin is. Because we forget. Do you think it's necessary? Do you think it's a good thing that there are laws and there are penalties with laws? And that those penalties are enforced? Yes, it is a good thing. And so the law has a purpose at nothing else. If there was no law, if those things didn't exist, then we would get to the point we would think sin's not that big a deal. And it would be really serious to have an illness, a terminal illness, and everybody telling you you're fine. And nobody tells you that this is going to kill you. And so you live and you die not really realizing how serious this was. You see, that's what law does. And so one of the things, the purpose of law, is to show us the seriousness of sin. And it does that by putting the standard and saying, if you don't live up to that standard, here's what it's going to cost you. And by the way, you would know that as horrible as it would be to watch somebody stoned to death, and you know, I can. That's hard for me to fathom. It's hard, and it would be even harder for me to think of me picking up one of those stones and throwing it at that person's head to try to kill them. That's hard for me to fathom. But as hard and as difficult as that is, you would have to know that that's not the really serious problem. It's a lot more serious to be eternally dead than it is to be physically dead. And so what that pictured is just a little small foretaste of what's really going to happen because of sin. That's not the really serious part, is being killed, being stoned to death. That is, by a long shot, not the worst news. The worst news is you're going to die eternally. You're going to suffer eternally. And so is law good? Yes, law is good. And it needs to be enforced. And when we don't enforce it, what happens to people? Then sin becomes insignificant. And whenever we change it, whenever we lower the standard so low that it doesn't reflect what God wants law to reflect, are we doing ourselves a favor? Are we doing ourselves a disservice as a nation, as people? That we just keep lowering the standard of law and lowering it and lowering it and lowering it until it really doesn't, it no longer reflects God's feeling about sin. You see, the very best laws, and the reason that God designed law is so that nations would make laws that would reflect how he feels about things. So, the purpose of law is to set a standard by which all men will be judged. And he says, every mouth will be stopped and the whole world become guilty before God. Now, we go back to, again, our three principles that we've talked about the last few weeks that God would pull from law. Have you ever told somebody it's wrong? Somebody says, hey, I'm not a sinner. I never have sinned. I heard somebody just within the last couple of weeks that made that statement that they said, I've never sinned. Really? Maybe you don't know what the standard is. Maybe we need to rehearse what the standard is. Because we look at other people and say, I'm pretty good. You know, I'm pretty good father. I never have killed anybody, and I'm pretty honest, and so forth. And we judge ourselves by ourselves, and we forget what the real standard is. And so God puts the standard out there. He says, if man looks at a woman, and you say, you know, that you've never committed adultery, that's good. Have you ever looked at a woman to lust after her? Maybe. In all truthfulness, yes. Then you're guilty of adultery. Okay. Any other comments, by the way? Galatians 3:24 goes there, too. We've already talked about that the law was put in charge. It was the schoolmaster, the King James says, to bring us to Christ. And you see, that's what the law did. How did the law bring us to Christ? Somebody tell me. How did the law bring us to Christ? In all that we've been talking about, how would that cause you to come to Christ? Because you would try to keep law, and you would know what you're supposed to be doing and know how you're supposed to act, and you would try to act that way, but what? You can't do it. You can't do it. And the wrong, the good that I want to do, I'm not able to do, and the evil that I hate, this I keep on doing. Romans chapter 7 is going to say. And so we say to God, I know I made a mistake. I know I sinned. I know you said for me not to do this, and I did it. But I promise you, I'm not going to ever do it again if you'll just give me one more chance. And what do? We do it again. And God, I know that I told you I wouldn't ever do it again if you'd give me one more chance. And you gave me one more chance, and I did it again, and I know that, and I'm sorry about that. But if you'll give me one more chance, I won't ever do it again. I promise you. Promise you. Won't ever do it again. What do? Do it again. And after a while, we either get tired of the hypocrisy of this and our inadequacy, and we get discouraged and we walk off and we quit, and we get bitter about everything and everybody else, and we look at all these other people that are trying to do what's right, and we start trying to pick fault with them because they're sinners just like we are, and we make it our objective in our life to prove that they are, and so we become critical of other people. Or either we come to the cross and we fall down flat on our face and we say, God, I can't do it. I've tried. Be merciful to me, the sinner. Now, what did pedagogos, what did the one put in charge just do? He brought us to Christ, didn't he? Now, it was a pretty negative road, and he whipped us a bunch along the way, and he told us every time that we tried to make excuses for ourselves about why we did this, he said, hey, that won't fly. And he said, you're going to die. And we say, but I don't want to die. And he says, it doesn't matter what you want, you sin. You deliberately, willfully practice sin. You're going to die. And the law couldn't help us. It could condemn us. It could tell us where we did wrong. But when you appeal to law, what does law say? Hey, the speed limit said plainly it was 35. The law can't help you when you sin. All it can do is condemn you. All it can do is take your face and put it there and say, I told you this is the way you've got to live and act. And we try to get a breath of air and we say, but, he says, there are no buts. The whole world becomes guilty before God. There is none righteous, not even one. And so what do? We beg for mercy and we go to the cross. And the law has brought us to Christ. But as long as we play some kind of a game and we hold out some hope for my righteousness that I'm better than you are, or I do this better than you, and as long as we're appealing to our righteousness and to law and to that standard for our righteousness, then the law hasn't done its job on us yet. We've got to come to the point that we realize we are without any hope whatsoever. It's got to take it all away from us. Until we realize, I'm a sinner. I have no hope whatsoever. And then, God's ready to give us some good news. Because you don't have to be good enough to go to heaven. You can't be good enough to go to heaven. So why do you keep putting this on yourself? And you say, well, you know, I just doubt myself. No, you doubt God. You're doubting God if you think He can't take care of your sins. And so the purpose of law is to convict, set up a standard by which man will be judged, and the result is going to be there is none righteous, not even one. None that have ever lived anywhere, anytime, of sufficient age or mentality to be held accountable for their own actions. Nobody. And that's me and you included in it. Then, and we've talked about this some, but just to make sure you've got it, the curse of law. Galatians chapter 3, verse 10. Tyrone, you got that for me? What's the curse of law? There's some good things about law.
All who rely on observing the law are under a curse. For it is written, cursed is everyone who does not continue to do everything written in the book of the law.
Okay, tell me what the curse of law is. Everybody who's relying on law to be justified is under a curse. And then he tells you what the curse is. What's the curse? Cursed is he that does not continue to do everything written in the book of the law. Everything written in the book of the law. Everything written in the book of the law. If you're going to appeal, if you're going to stand before God and appeal to law, appeal to your good life and how good and how righteous you are, you need to understand, if you're going to appeal to law, there's a curse you better be aware of that comes with appealing to law for your righteousness. The curse is, cursed is everyone that does not continue to do everything written in the book of the law. So you better be aware of that curse, because if you ever violate it one single solitary time, you're under the curse and you're not righteous. And so if you're going to appeal to your good life and how good you are, you better have your bases covered. And your bases better be in fact, not that you've just persuaded yourself, it better bear out with the facts that you've never violated law one time. You've never sinned one time in your life, because your sins and your transgressions have separated you from God. The wages of sin is what? Death. That's right. And there's no getting around it. There's no wiring around it. So, and by the way, it was never the purpose of the law of Moses to justify. Do you realize that? He didn't give it for that reason. It wasn't that he gave a law and it failed, and now he's given a better one. Galatians chapter 2, these are easy passages, remember. Galatians 2:21 and Galatians 3:21. Those two passages work pretty closely hand in hand. If a law had been given that could give life, verily righteousness would have come by law. If God could have made you righteous by law, he would have made you righteous by law. And if he could have made you righteous by law, and he sent his son to die a cruel death on the cross, then he's a murderer. If he could have made you righteous by law, he would have made you righteous by law. But Romans is going to tell us there's a problem with us keeping law. That's us. We're the problem. It's not law. Law's good and righteous and holy. The problem is, I can't keep it. And if I offend in just one point, James says, a man keeps the whole law and offends in just one point, he's guilty of all of it. And you say, I don't think that's fair. Well, I'll let you take that up with God. And you say, well, I was 90% righteous in my life. I did 90% of the time I did what was right. And when God says, if you did it 99.999999 all the way out as far as you can go, but you ever violated one time, then God has no choice about what to do with you. You see, there won't be any sin in heaven. Nary a one. Not one sin in heaven. Well, we're not used to dealing with absolutes, are we? We're used to dealing with, we're used to bargaining some. We're used to jerking a little slack for ourselves, aren't we? But if you stand before God and you've got one single sin charged against you, God has no choice about what to do with you. Depart from me. It's not like he's got a choice. Either you're righteous or you're not righteous. And whenever we're living by law and trying to be righteous ourselves, we're not getting the job done. And if you ever sin one time, then it doesn't matter if you never sin again. This is really serious stuff, folks. We've got to get this in our mind. He started out in Romans chapter 1, verse 18, that the good news is that a righteousness from God is made available, not a righteousness from law. And that's the contrast. There's two ways you can be saved. One of them is you can keep law perfectly and never make one single mistake. But if you've ever made one single mistake, you probably better rethink that. You better be looking for plan B. You better be looking for some other way to stand before God to be righteous, because you'll never be righteous again under law. So, the curse of law is perfect obedience is demanded. And then, by the way, you wouldn't need Jesus, would you? If you never sinned, if you're righteous under law, you don't need Jesus. You don't need grace. You don't need mercy. You earned it. You deserve it. You can knock on heaven's door and you can say, "Let me come in." God will let you come in. There's nothing to keep you out of heaven. But if you can't make that demand, then you better go to the cross and fall down flat on your face. And don't come standing up and say, "God, I know I'm not but 50% righteous. You're going to have to take care of the other 50%. You don't want any of your righteousness, because it's tainted. It's got sin embedded in it. Your righteousness does. You don't even want 1% of your righteousness. We've already gone through chapter 2 and 3, who's under law. We won't go through that. Does everybody understand we're all under law? Romans chapter 2, about verse 13 there, "For the Gentiles who have not the law do by nature the things contained in the law. These, having not a law, become a law unto themselves." Right? We went over that. So the Jew was given the law of Moses. The Gentile has, and the Bible doesn't give it a name, so let's give it a name. Let's call it moral law. You can call it law of the conscience if you choose. That's fine. But everybody has this awareness of right and wrong that constitutes a law. The Gentile who doesn't have the law does by nature the things contained in the law. Then that becomes a law. And it's given by God. And we talked about that. And to further testify that, we have a conscience that testifies we know the difference between right and wrong, right? And so if God were to pull our conscience out, put it up on the witness stand and say, "Testify, did Ken Stegall ever do what you told him not to do?" What's my conscience going to say? Yes, he did. He did. I told him not to, but he did. And he did it a bunch of times. And so, who's under law? Everybody is under law. Everybody's under God-given law. And the problem is, law can't help you once you sin. It can't help you. It can only condemn you. And when you appeal to it, then it just says, "You're going to die. You're guilty. You're guilty. You're guilty." And you say, "Yeah, but I only did this many times." You're guilty. The wages of sin is death. Turn with me to Romans chapter 7. We'll jump ahead and then we'll come back. Romans 7. By the way, just to kind of jump ahead and show you some of what we're going to see, verse 15, he's going to ask some questions. In fact, chapter 6, verse 1, "Shall we keep on sinning so that grace may increase?" And the answer is no. Verse 15, "Shall we sin because we're not under law but under grace?" The answer is what? No. You go to chapter 7, verse 7, "What shall we say then? Is the law sin?" What's the answer? No. The law is not sin. And we're going to... Then verse 13 of chapter 7, he's going to say, "Did that which is good then," talking about the law, "become death unto me?" No. You see, he's going to deal with this law thing a lot more. But I want to pick up in verse 14. And this is one of those passages that you have to read to yourself about 50 times before you can read it, because you've got some difficult wording in there. But he says, beginning in verse 14, we know that the law is spiritual, but I'm unspiritual. You see, there it already tells you what the problem is. Sold as a slave to sin. I do not know what I'm doing, for what I want to do, I do not do. But what I hate, I do. This is like opening my mail. This is like looking into my heart. And if I do what I do not want to do, I agree that the law is good. Boy, every one of those statements we need to think about. If the law tells me that this is right and this is wrong, that's a good thing. As it is, it's no longer I myself who do it, but it's sin living in me. Now, he's not disclaiming responsibility for his whole self. He's saying there's two me's that live in this body here. Watching. I know that nothing good lives in me that is in my sinful nature. For I have the desire to do what's good, but I cannot carry it out. Can we say amen? Yeah. For what I do is not the good I want to do. No, the evil I do not want to do, this I keep on doing. Now, if I do what I do not want to do, it's no longer I who do it, but it's sin living in me that does it. So he's saying, inside this body, there's two Ken Stegalls. One of them wants to please God, and one of them loves God, and one of them wants to honor God, and one wants to be good and do what's right. But there's another me living in here, too. And it doesn't give a rip. He's rebellious. He wants to do what he wants to do. He wants to do wrong because it feels good. Does sin feel good? Sure it does, at least for a while. If it didn't, you wouldn't do it. Right? And if you tell your kids that it doesn't, then they're going to find out you lied to them. And if you lied to them about that, they might think you lied to them about something else. It does feel good. That's one of the problems with sin, isn't it? So I find this law at work. When I want to do good, evil is right there with me. For in my inner being, I delight in God's law, but I see another law at work in the members of my body, waging war against the law of my mind, making me a prisoner of the law of sin that is at work within my members. What a wretched man I am. And we'll stop right there. He's going to give you open up a solution here to it. But that's what it's like to live under law. I know what's right, and I try to do it, but I'm just not able to do it. And I know what's wrong, and I promise I won't do it, but I'm not able to carry that out either. What a wretched man I am. In my inner being, I delight in God's law. But there's another law at work, and notice where he says it is. In the members of my body, my flesh. My flesh loves sin. I mean, it loves it. It loves everything about it. And there is an attraction that my body is attracted to sin. My mind says what? There's another law at work in my mind. My mind says what? Ken, that's wrong. That's going to cost you more than you want to pay. But my body says, I don't care. It feels good. If it feels good, do it. Boy, that's the mantra of the world, isn't it? If it feels good, do it. Man, that's where I am. That's the man under law. I know what's right. That's not my problem. I know what's good. And I want to do it. That's not even the problem. I want to do it. But there's another law at work in the members of my body that's pulling me away. And I've got two me's inside this body, and there's a war going on. I mean, there is a war going on in this body. And I'm not able to stop that war. I'm not able to make peace. I can't stop all this war that's going on inside of me. I think of things that I don't want to think about. I do things that I hate doing. Any of you ever been there? Sure, we've all been there. If we're really honest, we've all been there. And there's only one way out of this thing. I thank God through Jesus Christ, my Lord. It's going to talk about putting to death the deeds of the body. Boy, there's some radical action that's got to take place in my life. It's going to tell me when it starts. It's going to tell me the help that God gives me to put these sinful acts to death in my body? He's going to talk about that before we get through chapter 8. Well, I tell you what, if you think it's not practical, if you think the Bible's not real, you're not studying it. There's nothing more real in my life than this right here. This gets down to the root of my problem. I mean, I can make up all kind of nice terms, and I can read books, and I can listen to all this kind of stuff that the philosophy that the world has, and the world occasionally might reach out and get a little piece of truth and bring it to bear, and it really feels good, and it makes a lot of sense. But here's the origin right here. Here's where you can find the answer in God's Word. And it's real. It's not a fairy tale. It's not made up. It's not something you got to park your brains to believe. You don't have to be like a little baby bird in a nest and open your mouth and whatever somebody wants to cram in it. That's not what religion is. It's not for the gullible. It makes sense. It's real. It resonates deep inside of you. And when you get these questions answered, and we're still talking in 1:18 to 3:20 about how and why a person's lost. When you really understand that, and you understand, have a basis to understand why I'm lost, then you can, for the first time, appreciate how God has saved you and what He's done. You see, your righteousness is either earned or it's imputed. Either you deserve it or it's a gift. There is no combination of those two. And I guess it's that combination that I'm fighting, because I've been there. I've been there where I felt like I was only so much righteous and God was going to have to take care of what I couldn't do. And what I've got to understand before I can truly understand the gospel is I can't do any of it. I don't deserve anything except death. That's all. Period. Exclamation point. End of story. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. I don't want to stand before God and get what I've got coming. I want mercy. I want mercy. And I need all of it that He can possibly muster up. I need God's grace. Don't you? Okay, we'll pick up there, Lord willing, next week. Thank you.